Lions calendar. The annual Racine Kenosha March of Dimes, March for Babies event will be held this Saturday at Petrifying Springs Park. The two-mile walk begins at 10 with registration at 9. For more, visit marchforbabies.org. This is WGTD-FM. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jess Sheeler, an outreach and career transition specialist at Job Corps, Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW-Oshkosh, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Manji. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello and good morning. You're listening to Jess for Education Matters on WGTD HD. It is May 5th. Today I am joined by the Kenosha County Medical Examiner, Patty Hall, and the Kenosha County Health Department, right? Debbie Ruber, is that how you say your last name?
Yes.
Yay, I did it. So hello and thank you for joining me today. We're going to talk about the Kenosha County Opioid Task Force. So, from reading just a little bit, because I tried to Google you all, I was only able to find information initially on the Kenosha County website. Founded in 2017, correct?
Correct.
And so, introduce yourselves and explain your role and how you come to be on this task force.
Okay, well, I'm Patty Hall. I'm the Kenosha County Medical Examiner, and thank you for having me today. I'm a layperson medical examiner. I'm not a doctor. I've been with Kenosha since September of 2011. And over the past couple of years, the number of overdose deaths has increased, just like it's increased everywhere else across the United States. It's also affected our county, too. So in December of 16, I had called Cook County Medical Examiner's Office about something else. And then in talking with them, they had told me about, have you heard about the Chicago Area Opioid Task Force or the Lake County Opioid Initiative? I'm like, no. And it piqued my interest. I spoke with them more. I spoke with Chelsea Lee Liberty with the Lake County Opioid Initiative. I spoke with Mike Nierheim, who oversees, who's the state's attorney for Lake County. And I learned that their model that they've had in Lake County that they've been using with their opioid initiative has actually reduced the number of overdose deaths by 30%. So then I brought that back to Kenosha. I proposed it to John Jansen, who oversees the Human Services Division for Kenosha County, and he said to go for it. So I recruited Debbie, and we pretty much sent out emails to all of our contacts with police and fire and you know everybody who would be affected by this. And our first meeting was on February 14th of 2017, Valentine's Day. And our first meeting, we had probably, I think, about 35 people show up to that first meeting. So I was pleasantly surprised by that. We meet once a month on the second Tuesday of the month at 10 a.m. It's usually at the job center, but that can vary month to month. And since that time, we've grown. We're now like between 40 and 50 people at every meeting. We have a variety of different agencies. We have different, you know, we have families that are affected by the opioid crisis, and we have work committees, and we've just been growing and working hard on this. So we're I'm very proud of it.
Go ahead, Debbie. It's your turn.
I'm Debbie Ruber. I'm with the Kenosha County Division of Health as well as the Aging and Disability Resource Center. I'm a health educator. And as Patty said, she approached me and the health department to say, hey, can we do something about this? And we received a grant. It's called a CARA grant. and that we're one of 12 different counties in the United States that received this grant. And it allows us to run the opioid task force. And what this grant allows us to do is expand what we've already started into doing the work groups and do some outreach and work with the people in long-term recovery to see what kind of needs are out there for housing services, recovery, and also just even address the different issues going on with the hospitals or EMS, anybody, whatever kind of issues that they're seeing. So with us being together for over a year now, like Patty said, we've gone into the work groups, and those have been a little slow to get off the ground, but helps us, like I said, do more of a focus.
So when we talk about this task force being constructed so that we can combat opioid use in our community, what is the significance? What are the numbers that we're seeing that have triggered us to want to do this? Because you hear all over the place that opiates are now a significant thing that is not just affecting Kenosha, but affects us nationwide. So in our own community, I think on the website it said that in 2016 there were 54 opiate deaths. Is that, do I have
that
correct? Well,
there was 54 toxicity deaths. So okay. That covers a variety of different drugs. So that could be, most of them were due to opiates or opioids.
Mm-hmm.
But that can also cover, you know, cocaine. It can cover alcohol, just different medications that people can abuse and die from.
Have the numbers thus increased?
In 2017, they did increase slightly to 57 toxicity deaths for 2017. And a large majority of those were also due to opiates or opioids.
And now, because you guys have been up and running for a year, and it, you know, it's kind of brand new, I came to hear about it because I had heard of the Lake County Opioid Task Force, and then I saw y'all meeting, and I was like, I think they're modeling it after these people. Yay! But have you seen a decrease since starting this? I mean, have you started to notice that numbers are going down? Is there still, or is the opioid epidemic continuing to rise, and how do we combat that then?
Well, I mean, we started in, you know, as we said before, in February of 17. So we did have a slight increase. I don't have enough. I mean, I don't think we've been up and running long enough to have enough information to see if we've made a true difference yet. It seems like we are, because we have a lot more information out into the community. Mm-hmm. We've started the Opioid Task Force Facebook page, so we have that. We have the resource packets that are being distributed by the local hospitals here, by the local fire departments. We have the RAC cards that are being distributed by the fire department, by the Kenosha Fire Department. And I know Pleasant Prairie just got on board, too, with distributing those, too.
Mm-hmm.
We have Narcan in the hands of almost all the law enforcement agencies, as well as my deputy medical examiner. So we have that too.
Mm-hmm.
And even like with just starting that, I think that was in May that we started the Narcan distribution, May of last year, or was it maybe June? But even with that, it's been a short time period, and there's been 7 saves with those Narcan that we're aware of. There might be more, but we are aware of 7 saves with that. So that's a good thing. That's 7 less people who have died. So I see that as a positive thing.
I would say so. I was going to, to ask you next, because it kind of leads into the next question then. As far as Narcan being an effective way to abate the effects of opioids, is there an ample supply? And how is that funded? And is it only distributed so far and available to your fire department and other law enforcement officials?
The health department received a grant to be able to do that, so it's not taxpayers' dollars that are paying for the Narcan that's being distributed. Law enforcement has been trained. EMS has access to that. Mm-hmm. But the community is also being offered it. Anybody and everybody can get this. There is a standing order in the state that says you can just walk into a pharmacy and ask for it. Mm-hmm. Now, some people don't have the means to pay for it, and so that's where our grant comes in. We do have community trainings. It's the first Monday and the third Thursday of the month at 5 o'clock at the Job Center, which is at 8600 Sheridan Road. You can sign up online. You can call us. You can email us, and I can give that information as to how you do that. It is very readily accessible. Mm-hmm. We did have our first community save that was reported to us. And, again, some people are a little leery about, you know, why are we giving Narcan out? If anybody's had a family member or friend, coworker affected by it, it's something that can help reverse the effects of an opioid on somebody. And to sit there and wait for EMS to get there, you know, it's not easy to do. And this is something you can do very easily to have that person possibly come back. It's not 100%. Mm-hmm. It only works on opioids. So we do have that training, and the training is literally about 30 minutes long, and when you leave there, you have your Narcan with you.
So I would say that's an important point you just said. It only works on opiates or opioids. Now, that means that if somebody is, say, also using other things or that appears in their system, will Narcan be effective? So if somebody has decided that I'm going to, you know, take these drugs and also these other drugs, or I'm drinking while I'm doing my opiates, if somebody's going to administer Narcan, is that going to work for that person?
I think it's individual as to whether it's going to work on the person or not. Obviously, if it's just cocaine, mm-hmm. on board, Narcan's not going to work.
Right.
If it's combination, it might. It all just depends on what the system, how it reacts to that.
Okay.
But it doesn't hurt to
try.
Right.
So how quickly after Narcan is administered, is it effective?
Again, it should be within 2 to 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work, then they ask to administer a second dose of that. And by then, EMS should be there and be able to take over.
And that training that you were discussing that is being open now to the public, that's the Narcan distribution program, correct?
Correct.
All right. And that is open and available to anybody who is interested in learning how to safely handle and administer this, correct?
Yes. Correct.
Yes. Yay. And so who would you say your target audience is? Like, if people are listening today to this program and they're like, okay, how does this affect me and is it relevant to me? Who is our target audience for this, and how do we, you know, make more people aware of it?
I would say anybody and everybody, because you never know. You could be in a coming out of a store and find somebody in the parking lot that has overdosed. You could have a coworker that you don't know is using. Unfortunately, addiction is a quiet mm-hmm. disease. A lot of times, people don't always know. People can function and go to work and do everyday things a lot of times, and you don't know when an overdose is necessarily going to happen. So I would also encourage people that have a loved one that has an addiction problem with opioids to be trained. If you yourself are using and you need to be trained because you're afraid of an overdose, those are the people that we would target. But anyone is welcome to these trainings. We don't ask when you come to the training, why are you here? We're just glad
this
that
is a safe space to educate you and give you the tools, right?
Exactly.
So would you say, you know, that you hear a lot, or at least I think it's pushed out into the media a lot, or there's a perception that, you know, people are using heroin or people are using other sorts of pills, which are opioids. Would you say that there is a correlation between pain management and this new, like, opiate epidemic? Is there a pathway that, hey, I broke my leg and I was given, you know, Vicodin, and now I don't know why, but I want to continue to use this even though I am healed? Would you say that there's a correlation between the two?
We do see that that happen where somebody, because when we do our investigation, our death investigation, we are asking about, you know, a person's social history, their medical history, and a lot of times family and friends will tell us then, well, it all started when they, as you said, like they had some sort of injury, mm-hmm. and then the person then became addicted to whatever, that pain medication. So that does happen, but then there's, you know, there's other stories too where they never had any sort of injury or trauma that started everything like that. So, and there's plenty of people who do take, you know, they have an injury and then they have pain medication prescribed to them and they then come off of it and they're fine. So, but yeah, we do see that happen. It's not uncommon.
Other ideas as to why heroin use and opiates are becoming such a prevalent used drug within communities. Why are the rates increasing? Opinion based.
I mean, that's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's been a lot of different stories that come out that it goes back to, you know, prescribing and over prescribing and things like that. I've also heard too with how much a pill costs versus the cost of heroin is a whole lot, like heroin's a whole lot cheaper than, you know, buying a Vicodin pill.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that part of it too. In the past 2 years, well, in 2016 is where we saw the fentanyl coming into play.
Mm-hmm.
Of the 54 deaths that happened in Kenosha County in 2016, six of those were related to fentanyl or fentanyl analogs. In 2017, of the 57 Texas City deaths, 22 were related to fentanyl or fentanyl analogs. So that dramatically increased over this past year, where we're finding analogs that fentanyl analogs that we've never even heard or seen before. So that's also an issue too.
So with this task force, you had said that, you know, law enforcement in Pleasant Prairie just got on board, and because it does say Kenosha County, are the, you know, other villages and townships within our county participating, actively sit on this board? You know, from my experience, you know, I work with youth, and my job is to get young things jobs. So I have had lots of county kids whose parents are concerned with them staying in the county because they feel as if that is where the main target area is for where all of these opiates are coming in. So are places like Twin Lakes, Bristol, Salem, Paddock Lake, Trevor, Randall, Bassett, are they all on board? Do they participate in this? Do they have the literature as well?
Yeah, I've had, for the rat cards, it's Pleasant Prairie Fire that got on board with those. But when we introduced the overdose resource packets, the initial plan was just for the Kenosha Fire Department to have them. And then when we introduced them, all of a sudden, everybody was like, I'll take some and I'll take some. And we have them. The sheriff's department has them, Twin Lakes, the police department, our resource packets are all over the place. The rat cards are new, like within the past, maybe month or two, like they're a newer card. So those are, KFD, the Kenosha Fire Department has those, as well as I said before, Pleasant Prairie Fire. I just got on board with the rat cards, but I'm pretty sure that that's going to also be expanding, too, once we get out there. But we've had the agencies have been very open and receptive. The fire departments and the police departments have been open and receptive to being on board with this program. So we're happy about that.
Great. So for those of you that are just tuning in, you are listening to Education Matters. I'm Jess, and today I have Patty Hall and Debbie Ruber, who are joining me from the Kenosha County Opioid Task Force to discuss how we can bring our community kind of up and out of this opioid epidemic that we hear so much about. So, RAC card. Does RAC card stand for anything? What is on a RAC card?
Well, this card came about it was a brainstorm basically of EMS. Kenosha Fire Department came to our task force and we were talking about how to get information out there and just where overdoses are happening and things like that. And they kind of said, well, what if we give these out when we do building inspections fire inspections. And so when they do that, they talk to the owner about these cards because there could be overdoses that happen in businesses, whether it's in the bathroom, parking lot, whatever it might be. Maybe they have an employee struggling. So these cards came about to encourage people to do something. If they see something, do something. And we don't have a better, I guess, name for them except for the RAC cards. We just know what we're talking about, I guess.
So. React, act, call, yeah. Right?
Yes.
Take action.
Yeah. Yeah. So that these have been put out in our community and they're being utilized. And like I said, the fire department took this and just kind of ran with it. And so they've been a great partner with us. And Pleasant Prairie heard about it and they jumped on board as well. And we hope to have the other fire departments as well as other agencies in our community having these cards so that people feel like they can do something, because sometimes you're not sure what to do in this case. And this just walks you through what an overdose looks like, and then what you can do.
Gotcha. What does an overdose look like? If people are tuning in today and they're like, I'm still not very comfortable with going and talking, because it is such a very stigmatized idea still that we need to talk about it and actually take action to combat this issue. What does an overdose look like?
Well, an opioid overdose looks like people would have pinpoint pupils or really tiny pupils. They may be breathing, and it might be slow, labored. It could actually sound kind of gurgly or like they're snoring. We'll hear people say sometimes, yeah, I just thought my loved one was sleeping. But they don't normally snore, but they sounded like they were snoring. Their lips and toes, fingernails can turn purple or blue. They are unresponsive, so if you try to wake them up, they will not wake up. Mm-hmm. And Those are things that you kind of look for. And as you can hear, that this kind of sounds like some other things that would be happening. So when we find these different things, we definitely tell people to call 911, but then also to administer Narcan. Mm-hmm. If you administer Narcan and it's a cardiac emergency, it's not going to hurt that person. We don't encourage people to just give it if it's a cardiac emergency because, again, we already know it's not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. But if you're seeing these signs, that's definitely something that would indicate an opioid overdose.
And because you folks were given a grant to do this, where do we rank in the state and where does Kenosha County rank in the prevalence of overdoses?
Yeah. Unfortunately, per capita, we're one of the highest in the state.
Wow.
So that's something that we are obviously looking to reverse, because it taxes our office. I mean, our medical examiner's office is a small office with increased number of overdose deaths. That's a strain on our budget. It's a strain on my personnel. There's also, with the new fentanyl and fentanyl analogs, there's a lot more precautions that my deputies have to take when going to a scene. So there's more training with PPEs, personal protective equipment. So there's a lot of different things of why this, you know, affects us and why we're trying to get the overdose deaths down.
Mm-hmm. And not to mention the effects it has on our community and the families.
Correct, right. Yes.
Right. So as far as, you know, using Narcan, are there statistics about how many people continue to use after they've had this near fatal experience? How often do people go back out and say, hey, thanks for the new lot in life, I'm going to go back to my dealer real quick?
I don't think that there are hard and fast statistics, because sometimes people use Narcan and you don't know it. It's not always reported. We always encourage people to go seek medical attention, because Narcan will wear off within 90 minutes. Okay. So you could actually go back into overdose mode. So
that's
we don't have
administer any... call, get the EMS there.
Yep, correct. Absolutely. Yes. And the Narcan that we do administer is nasal Narcan, because sometimes people are like, oh, I don't know if I could, use a needle and poke somebody with the Narcan that way. There are different forms, and what we have is nasal Narcan.
So that kind of leads me into the next question. I know that the DA, Mr. Gravely, I call him Mr. because he was a professor of mine at Parkside. he sits on your task force, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
And, I kind of understand that there is a drug treatment program for people who have been caught, who are using that sort of thing. And on the Kenosha County website, it talked about the medical assisted treatment program. So how do people get involved? Is it only court appointed that, I got in trouble and now I have this opportunity to take, and go through this addiction program? Or can anybody come and say, hey, I have a problem? Because I know in Lake County, you can go into a police station and say, I have an opioid addiction, and they will help you get into a treatment program. How does it work here?
We haven't gotten that far as doing the treatment program, or a way out is what they call it in Lake County yet. But you can access different medically assisted treatment programs here. Through the health department, we do work with PSG, which is Professional Services Group, for a medically assisted treatment program. So the lay community basically can go there. Or what we do is after people are released from jail, can get into that program as well. They go right to the medically assisted treatment program after being released. And then there are other agencies as well in our community that administer different medically assisted treatment.
And also, too, there's the KIDS, which is the Kenosha Human Development Services. Their number is 262-657-7188. And they have a lot of different resources, too, to get people into different programs.
And there's also the diversion program that the DA also has as well.
So currently, though, right now, if somebody was listening who has an opioid problem, how do they go get help?
If they were to, if I knew somebody or somebody called or just asked me, I would put them over to Crisis, which is the number, the 657-7188.
Mm-hmm.
Or the health department, too, but I would put them over to Crisis, and because they have a lot of different resources available, and this is, something that's a part of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So they can...
Would they then refer them to Chris Schoen at PSG, possibly? Or is that, primarily used for folks getting out of jail, and this is what they've now been mandated to do?
That's one of their options. I mean, it can be the community person that just, they haven't been in trouble with the law or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And calling, Crisis or the Mental Health and Substance Abuse Resource Center that's located there, they can help the person figure out what's best for them, because, sometimes there's an insurance issue or, this is what's accepted at this agency but not at that agency. Mm-hmm. So
I saw that you whipped out your Narcan.
So
the viewers, the listeners can't see it, but Patty, if you want to take a moment to just describe what it looks like, if somebody is listening and wants to go to the store and ask for this, give a little background as to what this is.
Through the Kenosha County Health Department and the Narcan grant, they distribute the Narcan nasal spray, which is a 4 milligram dose, and it's super easy to use. It's similar to using a nose spray for your, if you had a sinus infection or allergies. It's not the same shape per se, but it's the same thing. You squeeze down on it and it goes up the person's nose. So it's a spray, and you just deploy it on the bottom and or put it into the person's nose, deploy it on the bottom, and it goes right in. So it's very easy to use. It's easy to carry. I carry it in my purse. That's what I have. So.
As far as the goal and mission of this group, let's talk about your goals and where your projected outcome is. Where do you want to go with this? Because right now it sounds like we're informational. We're at probably the ground level here, passing out the information and making people aware of it. Where do you guys want to go from here?
I would love to have a similar program that they have in Lake County called a Way Out program. There's also a program back in Macomb County, Michigan, it's called Hope Not Handcuffs, which is also similar to the Way Out program. So that's something that I would love to have implemented here. But also coming from the medical examiner's office, you know, standpoint, we would like to get these numbers reduced. I don't want to be inundated with overdose deaths. It's hard, it's sad. And as Debbie said before, it affects the community, it affects families, and you know, we want to try to help. I know it's kind of weird, like, oh, the medical examiner's office wants to help, but I want to help.
Right, because death happens every day.
Yes.
But, you know, it shouldn't be a 16-year-old because they're having fun at a party one night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think, too, how do we get these programs? What's stopping us from having them? Is it just because you all are too new? Or who needs to get on board and who do we need to bug so that we can have those programs?
That's a good question. I just look back, I guess, to our task force, and you know, we've broke into work groups, and we want to do prevention, education, and awareness as one of the groups. Mm-hmm. And we don't do enough prevention, I don't think, in our community. I don't think we do in the United States to begin with. There's a lot that needs to be done as far as that goes. And if we started focusing more on prevention, then I think we would see a big change. We're working, you know, with healthcare and first responders as far as how to address issues that how can they help, mm-hmm. and look at those different angles. We're also looking at policy, legislation. You know, how do we change the way things are here so that they are helping and not hurting? Mm-hmm. And then even looking at our data, it's pretty new. I mean, yeah, we have data that shows deaths and things, but trending wise, it's gonna take a little bit before we see how that can help. And then treatment and recovery. There's a lot of room for improvement in our community for that as well. What we have is great, but we can use more. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's debate on what we need, but that's what our task force is working on. And if people have ideas and suggestions, everybody is welcome at this task force meeting. It's, you don't need an invitation. You're welcome to come. Some of the people can't come to the meetings and they just receive the emails and the meeting minutes. And but again, we're open to learning what people think might work and to working to those solutions together, because it's not going to just take one thing. I think it's going to take a lot of different things and changes here in our community.
And I think too with us, I mean, we're new. We're, you know, a little bit over a year old. So it's going to take time to get things implemented. But I think we're in a great place. I think we're moving forward. We're growing. We have, more people joining every month. So that's a positive thing. We also have our Kenosha County Opioid Task Force Facebook page that has information on it too. I know Debbie's working on the Kenosha County website with to get information up there too. So that's a work in progress. So, but you know, things they take, as Debbie said, they take time to develop and get it out there into the community, and we're trying to do that.
Prevention. Let's talk about that. What does that look like? Because one of my questions is, how do we combat the stigma that is associated with this? Because I feel as if when you have these drugs, heroin, everybody goes, oh, that's horrible. And it's almost as if opiates have kind of, they've become this big mass idea. And I don't think people understand that, you know, what you get from a doctor sometimes is an opiate. And those drugs are also readily available to anybody. So how do we combat, you know, stigma and boost prevention? What does that look like? And how do we get that going? Because we have to be able to tell people, hey, no judgment. You have a problem. And let's make sure you don't die.
Well, I think there's a lot of alternatives that people can do besides taking medication. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not knocking people that take medication because sometimes it is warranted. But ask your physician, is this the right thing for me to take? Because a lot of times people will want a pain medication. In the United States, we're one of, I think, three countries that allow drug companies to advertise. So mm-hmm. a lot of people will walk right into a doctor's office and say, I want this. And whereas a drug that isn't addictive could be given instead to help out with that. Or, you know, people could try, you know, doing other things, you know, such as non-traditional medicine, like acupuncture or chiropractic care. And sometimes those can be beneficial to people. Mm-hmm. You know, even exercise. But again, if you're in pain, it's hard to do that. I get it. But you have to, I guess, kind of explore different options. As far as prevention goes, I mean, letting people know that, I mean, if you take opiates or opioids for 2 weeks, your body's going to become dependent on them. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to then go from there because there are withdrawal symptoms that happen. And that is one of the hardest things, I think, for people to not do opiates because they know what's coming up. I mean, the withdrawal symptoms can be very difficult. And no, you're not going to die from them, but they're not pleasant at all.
No, and so, it's more pain.
And so if we can, you know, even help people step down from that pain and make it a little less severe, that would, I think, be helpful as well. So those are, I mean, it's not necessarily a prevention thing, but, you know, prevention, I think, is just something that we really have to explore and see what's going to work for our community. And everybody always says, oh, you know, we need to get the information in the schools. And I think that's part of it. But schools have so much they have to cover to begin with. But, you know, there is just, I believe, a bill signed that there has to be some kind of education done in the schools. So we'll see what that looks like coming down.
I mean, they have health class. You would think that would cover it. I mean, like, when I was in elementary, 5th grade, middle school, 6th through 8th, and then high school, 9th through 12th, I was required to take health class. And a lot of times they pushed exercise, make yourself well. Maybe if we had an initiative of a love yourself, make yourself well, we can cover all of these alternatives so that we're not trying to numb all of our pain. Because I think that's a significant issue. We have become very quick to shut down any sort of communication about how we feel and go into a medicated state, which does nothing but make you dependent and then eventually lead to your death. So one aspect of prevention that I saw affiliated with you folk on the Kenosha County page was Hidden in Plain Sight, which does train the community as to what a mock teenager's room would look like and what to look for. So would you like to discuss a little bit about that?
Sure. We have that capability to come into a school, a community agency, a neighborhood watch house, mm-hmm. and set this up and say, this is some things that might indicate that your teen, young adult may be using drugs. Because a lot of times people aren't aware of what that is. And a lot of normal everyday things that a kid has in their room might actually have hiding spots in there. And I think parents a lot of times are like, well, it's, you know, privacy. And but again,
you are a child. You don't have privacy. I'm making that point now.
And I think we have to be able to be comfortable with being in our kids' room. But again, it doesn't only start at teenage years. It starts younger. Mm-hmm. You know, spend some time with your child and talking to them and be in their rooms, know what's in there so that as they get older, it's not an awkward situation to be in their rooms and then that they're not hiding things from you. Mm-hmm. If they do, and sometimes they're hanging out with kids that are making not good choices, and your child gets pulled into that, or maybe your child is the one pulling the other kids into that. Be involved in your kid's life. One of the biggest things I think that you could do is look on social media as to what your kids are doing, and that's going to clue you in a lot. But this Hidden in Plain Sight room, very easy to set up, and we offer it out in the community, and we come in, set it up, and people walk through, and then we actually go over what we find. You know, what did you find? What did you see that didn't look right or that might indicate something? And do some educating with people so that they are aware and it's not such a surprise.
Gotcha. And if somebody wanted to participate in that experience, narcan@kenoshacounty.org, is that how they would get in touch with you folks?
That would be a great way for the Narcan training or the Hidden in Plain Sight room.
Gotcha. Yeah. And again, this affects everybody, just to recap. So no one is excluded from the potential impact of what an opiate epidemic is within our community. You guys did discuss that you have partnerships. Do you partner with Stop Heroin in Kenosha?
We've invited them to the table, but we have not had communication with them.
Okay. How do you think it would be a beneficial partnership? Because initially, before you all existed, that's the group I knew about because they posted everywhere. You know, within the music scene, lots of people are dying, and lots of people, for some reason, very much enjoy opiates and heroin. So, you know, I came to know about Stop Heroin in Kenosha because a lot of the ex-band members or family members were initially the ones that raised awareness for this group. How do we pull them into the table, and would it be beneficial since their mission is to, you know, educate and prevent people from using this?
Like I said, everybody's is welcome. So if you're not at the table and you want to be there, you know, by all means, show up at our meeting, email us, call us, whatever works for you. Message us on the Facebook page, whatever. Mm-hmm. But yes, I mean, any partnership is welcomed.
So as we near the end of our program, how can people find you folk?
Well, we have, as I mentioned before, we have the Kenosha County Opioid Task Force Facebook page. So, you know, they can message us on there through the Narcan, through email, which is the narcan@kenoshacounty.org. Call the health department.
We also have the Kenosha County Opioid Task Force email, which is kcotf@kenoshacounty.org. All kinds of ways.
Okay. And those meetings, again, are open to anybody, correct?
Correct.
The task force
yes.
meets when? Let's do it one more time.
It's the second Tuesday of the month. So the next one is on May 8th at 10 a.m., and that is at the Kenosha County Job Center, which is at 8600 Sheridan Road. The room is North 3, which is on the north side of the building. So, and everybody is welcome. If you want to participate, it's awesome. We encourage people to come there because, you know, everybody has different ideas. And that's how everything has been evolving over the past year is, you know, different people bringing different ideas, and we're able to work together and make positive changes.
So in closing, if you want to be actively involved in your community and help contribute to the greater growth of who we will be, and prevent deaths so that Patty doesn't have to work so hard and be depressed every day at work, please talk to your family members, your friends, get involved. You can find them again through Facebook, by calling the health department, by coming to the second Tuesday of the month meetings.
Yes.
So please get involved. Other closing thoughts?
If people need support too, we do have a support group for people who have lost somebody to addiction. So they can find that also on the website. And it's the second and fourth Thursday of the month at 6 o'clock.
We implore you, do not be scared. If you have an issue, please reach out, because we want to make our community better by helping you. And we can't do that if you don't speak up. So I'm Jess for Education Matters on WGTDHD. Thank you very much,
Thank
Patty
you.
And Debbie, for joining
Thank
me. Have a great Saturday.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. Support comes from Fine Arts at First, closing out the season with the Fine Arts Jazz Ensemble, featuring some of the top jazz musicians in Southeast Wisconsin. This Sunday at 3 at First United Methodist Church in Kenosha at the corner of Sheridan and 60th.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, that's what keeps